everyone. Thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio, featuring The Crew, where a former pro football player, a D3 All-Star, and a guy who peaked in high school use strength and conditioning as an excuse to talk about everything but. Now here's John, Luke, and Tex. Drop on, kick the wheels right before the hammer strikes. Make sure the levels far from low. I got the girls shining, oh so bright.
Good morning, John.
What's happening?
Good morning, Tex.
And to you.
I'm Luke, and this is another episode of Power Athlete Radio, the premier podcast in strength and conditioning.
Bang.
Zero.
If you're wondering what the zero has to do with anything, well, it's the last number on the hotline, which is a 10-digit sequence of numbers that you dial into a phone and we'll connect you with our voicemail. And that's exactly what this listener did today. We are doing another episode of our Crew podcast where we scrub our voicemail and find questions that need answers, and we give those to you. If you have a question that you want to ask us, call us. 929-464-464-0. That's right. That's 929-ing-ing.
Zero.
That's right. That's right. And you call that number, leave us a voicemail, give us as much info as you want, or maybe as little as info as you want. More is like, we want it to be perfect, really. We want the right amount of info, but we don't want too much. The goal should be 40 to 55 seconds, because that's really as long as of attention span as all of us have.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hope to contain Tim Wacker.
Tim Wacker is a force to be reckoned with, but he needs to know, and we owe him answers. That's not
He leaves us shorter ones, but he just leaves a series of shorter ones. Instead of leaving us a 5-minute one, he leaves us five.
He's probably like, oh my God, I don't want these guys to roast me. Tim, I'm telling you, just let it flow. Just let it. Just give us three-minute voicemails. Get us all the info. We'll figure it out.
Well, it beats the Fig Newton. Well, hey guys, this is going to be a long one. And then we're like, oh.
Yeah. Fig Newton is also Tom Karavolis out of Newton, Massachusetts. Doxed? Did I dox him?
No. Well, we call him Fig because he likes to wear a loincloth. He's Greek. Mm-hmm. So it's his preferred, you know, dress of being American Greek is a loincloth.
Yes. Very hairy man who likes to be shellackied.
Shellanged. With olive with olive oil. Speaking of which, Stephen G. Miller and I have been emailing back and forth, and he's sending us his new book.
Oh, sweet.
So I'm pretty excited about it. He researched. He found some really interesting information in his excavation of like the Olympic sites. It has to do with the Dark Ages.
And a little background for new listeners, potentially. Stephen G. Miller was one of your professors
at Berkeley.
At Berkeley. And is currently in Greece,
When he was in his 30s, he was a PhD student. He went to Greece. And based on the documents from antiquity, was able to discover one of the original Olympic sites at Nemea and started excavating it himself. Mm-hmm. Went back to Berkeley, presented his PhD, got funding, and then every summer went back and excavated. And now he lives over there. He retired, lives over there full time. And I emailed him because, man, I think Joe Rogan had a guy on the podcast that was an anthropologist that went through and was talking about psychedelics being used within wine for all these ancient cultures and pull all this stuff together. And I was going to pick up the book because I think it's kind of an interesting deal. But I sent Stephen G. Miller, hey, had you heard of this? And he's like, I have. The only problem is I've never encountered any of this in any of my research. And he's the foremost expert in the world on ancient athletics and these original Olympic sites, which were kind of rituals and festivals all mixed in one. Mm-hmm. So the Olympic Games were like a festival. So he's like, if there was psychedelics and secret weird ingredients in wine and all the other stuff, there would be something within the historical text or something within it to reference it. So
I think that was episode, just for our listeners, 82 or something.
Correct. You are correct.
Yeah. I'm still fighting to get him back on.
Do you remember in that episode what they had to outlaw in the original Olympics? That was like the original PED, performance enhancing drug.
Wasn't it bee pollen?
I think it was milk.
Was it milk?
I think it was cow's milk, because the athletes who had access to cow's milk were strong, bigger, stronger, and faster. I'll have to go back and re-listen to that.
But he, so he's sending me his new book. I want to get him on to talk about it because I've always been fascinated by the Dark Ages. Mm-hmm. So there's always this idea that, like, why is it the Dark Ages? And people assume because, like, nothing happened. I think it's called the Dark Ages, and at least through my research, because there's no historical referencing of that period of time. Mm-hmm. So at the time, the Catholic Church controlled most of the information, and they just choose to make it disappear.
We don't like that one.
Yeah. So he's got a book on that, and just a super sharp dude. But yeah, my con is to get him back, but I don't know if he has access to Zoom. I think he might only have a landline.
Oh, I think we're going to have to go and do it in person, John.
Dude, you want to talk about an epic deal that we could go to the site of one of the original Olympic Games? Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about power athlete going home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 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 The origin of the power athlete.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how can we segue?
Talk about athletic development.
Yeah.
Long-term and peaking.
Long-term.
After high school.
Peak potential.
Well, let's pull up our...
So here's who we got.
Loyal listener.
Yeah, we got no name, but we have a phone number. So if you want, here's his phone. Just kidding.
You should totally post it in the show notes.
No, I'll put TC's phone number. Here we go, guys. Here's the question on the old voicemail. You guys ready? Let's do it.
Hey, dudes. Long time, first time. Wife just told me that she's pregnant. We're having a boy. Big news. Excited about a potential future power athlete joining the crew.
Yeah.
Question though. So at least 5 years ago, John talked about on a podcast with Romanoff about crawling tracks and not swaddling and spatial awareness for babies and et cetera. Haven't heard a lot of information since. I'm just wondering what's the updated news on raising a kid between the Summers and the Wellborn clan. Thanks. Look forward to it. Bye.
My first question is, when he said my wife's having a baby, you need to ask him, who the hell did that?
Yeah, who did that?
Yeah, who did?
How? You know, explain how this happened.
In the other guys, remember where he's like, who put a baby in you? Remember, he's like, Gator ain't got no babies.
Gator. Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Thanks for dropping a question. Tex, what do you think?
Interesting. Why not start with lots of barefoot crawling, you know, and just set the kid free?
Yeah, I guess the episode I think he's talking about, we were trying to scrub real quick before we started filming or recording.
I don't think we've ever had Dr. Romanoff on.
I don't think so, but I do think you and Spitz talked a little bit about his research. Dave Spitz out of Cal Strength. Do you have that episode?
188.
188, which I don't think is going to be on iTunes. So you'll
PowerAthleteHQ.com.
Yeah, you have to go to PowerAthleteHQ.com/podcast, and you can find it there in the archives.
Radio.
Oh, slash radio.
Correct.
Thank you, Tex, for the clarification. PowerAthleteHQ.com/radio. And I think everything's up there. Almost everything. I've got some hidden episodes.
You mean the Cal Turley one we never released?
Well, I don't have that one. Cali has
that one. Cali burned it.
And then we have the Summer Strong flop. And then we have the episode zero. What else do we have? We got to have two or three.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean the one that we filmed at Summer Strong that we decided
to do a dumpster fire after after we all did 10 shots? I mean, that's not what actually
happened. I went to bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's right. Yeah. Getting back into this, so that's episode 188, and find that on the website. But the discussion really centered at that point, John. Like, you and Dave were kind of, well, if you could control, because I think there's kind of two lanes, right? Could and should. You know, what would be an ideal athletic development track for, let's say, the first 10, 15 years of life, right?
Well, there's a direct correlation between physical intelligence and mental intelligence up into about the age of 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. So the more movement that the child has, the more intelligent he becomes. I remember years ago, and whether or not this is true or not, I don't know, but it was actually in reference to Rasputin, who was the Russian mysticist who, and basically infiltrated the Russian royal family. And was this like crazy monk. So I read a bunch of stuff on Rasputin. I just thought he was an interesting character. But he was born in Siberia. And the interesting thing is the ground froze so early in Siberia that they could, if you had a child in a certain window, you had to basically, like, you had to have children in this window or the child wouldn't survive, mm-hmm. because the ground was so cold that, like, and the parents were working and doing things, they didn't have time to hold the child all the time. So the baby would just basically freeze to death. So Rasputin was born outside the window, but because he started to walk at 6 months years old, at 6 months, he was, you know, ended up surviving. So I always thought that was a pretty interesting thing that talked about, like, development. Like, how could they get a child to walk at 6 months? Well, you know what? If it's just forceful, if the ground is cold and they, like, yeah. put the baby on the ground. So I always remember that was a pretty interesting observation. But the other one, too, is just, you know, like, I'm a huge believer in, like, old, like, when it comes to children and babies and all that, like, old wives' tales and observations over time. Like, I think the observations of grandmothers and, you know, things that they've observed over history have so much weight for me compared to, like, current research. And I always love when all these parenting books and all this stuff comes out and the doctors have no children. Mm-hmm. That always kind of blows me away. But that one with Rasputin was pretty interesting. But the other one, when I got a chance to hang with Dr. Romanoff years ago, I asked, and this is when I found out my wife was pregnant with twins. I asked Dr. Romanoff, you know, like, what did they do for athletic development with the children? Like, what did it look like in the athlete villages? What type of things? And he made a couple interesting comments. One of them was, like, put the baby on the floor. They have to explore their environment. They have to learn to move. And he's like, American children are coddled and held too much. And what that doesn't force them to do is explore their surroundings and pull and move, and it doesn't allow them to exercise. And he basically made a comment like, we treat them like veal. We carry them everywhere. We do everything for them. We don't allow them to explore their environment. The other one he said that was a terrible deal is the things that assist their walking, right. Especially like the bouncing things when you put them in, like, the bouncy thing in the doorway. He's like, don't use anything that changes their gait or allows them to move without their own ability. Put the baby on the floor, leave it alone. You know, like, he's like, I don't suggest you lock it out or this, but, like, you know, go in the kitchen, leave the baby, like, you know, obviously, you know, put it in a space where it's not going to hurt itself, mm-hmm. but, like, allow the baby the freedom to explore its surrounding, pull itself up, do things. And he's like, you kind of have to, like, watch out of the corner of your eye. And that was a pretty big one. He said the other one, too, is had to do with eyesight development, that when we started swaddling children and putting them on their back, they started developing eyesight different because they were focusing on things far, opposed from being on their stomachs and focusing on things close. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we developed the ability to see close to far, opposed from far to close, was something that he observed. Mm-hmm. The other big one was the crawling tracks. So I think I've told this story, and God, it's been so long, like, I can't remember the exact details, but when I was in Philadelphia, and this is pretty young in my NFL career, I got asked to be the keynote speaker at this special school. And it was pretty interesting. Like, Julie Dubin, who was the head of public relations, was like, hey, would you mind going and being a keynote speaker for these guys? And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I get to go take a limo and you go to dinner and you get to go to an event. You know, me and I'm always looking to try to, you know, add a story in it. So we go to this event, and it was a school for kids with special needs up in Bucks County, up like in, up, you know, somewhere outside of Philly. And what they had done is children that had like Down syndrome or like some severe brain and just physical things, like the parents realized that they couldn't be the person that the child needed to take them on the next part of this journey. So they would actually come and like ward them to these people and sign them over. And then the parents would leave and like not have any contact, which sounds pretty horrible, but they would like rehabilitate and bring these kids along. And like kids with Down syndrome would all of a sudden be able to like live on their own and, you know, have like, you know, an apartment and a relationship and just the amount of stuff that they did. So they get up and they're like talking about the school and then like going through these kids, and the parents are getting up and telling these like harrowing tales of like coming here at 4 years old and dropping their child off and signing them over and then not having contact, but just, you know, very, and then the headmaster gets up and talks about like what they did for the work and how this whole thing was, and made that point that there's a direct correlation between intelligence and physical intelligence. So what they did is they got these kids to move. They did gymnastics. They did this. I mean, they did so much stuff. And as I've listened to these stories, all of a sudden the headmaster guy like reads my bio as the keynote to like, and I got up there and I had like written out this speech. And I remember being like, I just kind of threw it away and was like, I've never been so embarrassed in my life that like the accomplishments that he's highlighting are nothing compared to what these children and what these parents have done. I'm not a parent, but like I can't even put myself in it. It was one of those, one of the only times in my life where I've been like legitimately embarrassed to have somebody sing accolades in the face of people that like have fought the ultimate fight, at least in my book. So I remember that encounter. And when I started asking them about like kind of like things that they did and whatnot, one of them had to do, and they remember seeing these like crawling tracks, and what they were is they were wood. They had sides, and they were probably 24, you know, 30 inches, and they had a side on them, and then they had them covered in like Naga hide or vinyl, and they were foam padded. And they would actually ask, like, the babies as young as, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days old, they would put them in the track to sleep, and then the babies would naturally start crawling. Mm-hmm. As you know, like with babies, when they sleep, they have their legs underneath them, and that kind of like almost like a little egg. Yep. And they would kind of start to do it. And so I created these tracks. Me and Jesse Gray built them in my backyard. And when we brought the kids home, we set up the tracks. And I swear the kids crawled. My wife still says the kids didn't crawl. They just screamed. But we did that. The other big one was Dr. Romanoff made a good point. He's like, don't make your children wear shoes until it's mandatory for them to wear shoes to go to school. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even buy the kids shoes. Like when it was cold, they wore like these like booty socks, or they wear, they still catch, you still wear some rubber shoes, but they wore no shoes growing up. They started gymnastics as soon as I could get them. I took them down to the Azarian place. So something that teaches spatial awareness, tumbling, movement, intrinsic balance. So we did, I had balance beams. I had all the gymnastics stuff at home too. So they would go, we did swimming. We had a backyard, and you guys have heard me play the game where I make the kids swim, and then I swim under the water, and I pull them down and basically teach them to, now they're great. We get in the water, and those kids fucking swim like fish. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a good one. I mean, I've been a little hesitant on terms of like organized sports because of the parents and just kind of like the hysteria around it. But the kids have done really well with swimming. They've done really well with gymnastics. Killy's transitioned really well into horseback riding. And for the most part, I just wanted them to have like a, you know, existence. Like the big one, I just, you know, today's her birthday. They turned 9, so I got them skateboards, because part of the thing is I want to take them skiing this year, and I want to teach them that sliding. So I thought it was great to introduce a skateboard at this point, and that teaches mm-hmm. balance. Mm-hmm. So just the biggest one comes... the big deal, they're so nervous about SIDS happening that's why they swaddle and they have baby sleep on their backs, which like I can't even imagine the SIDS deal. Like when you're going through as a young parent, you're watching these videos, like the fear of coming in and having this is like wakes you up every couple, every hour to go check on the baby, and you swaddle them and they lay on their backs, but which is an unnatural position. Like babies like to sleep on their face. I mean, if you notice, they turn their heads, like the mouth, the way their faces are kind of built allows for it. So, and then they talk about like the benefit of tummy time, mm-hmm. which, you know, like that's all we would do. Like we would swaddle the children when they slept. The minute they were up, we put them on the tummy ground time.
We did do swaddle, and she slept on her back, and then it was, when there was no swaddle, it was tummy time. Yep. Or I was like, when I knew she started to see, like there's a very clear point where it's not just shapes anymore. There's like,
they're
mimicking and trying to do the same facial expressions that you are, maybe even the same gestures with the arms, hands, legs, cause they can't do anything. They're just blobs of totally uncoordinated waste and poo. Like that's it, until they start to switch on. And then when she started to do that, that's when I started to spin her, invert her, kind of like just do some tumbling. I figured, I don't know, like if you do it from day one, it's never going to be weird.
Well, the other one too is, Jesse's dad made me a little ladder. So mm-hmm. I had this little ladder with rungs, and I don't know if you guys remember this. They used to hold onto the rungs, and I would carry the ladder around.
Yep.
So the way that I transported them was that they had to hang and hold their hands, and then I would transport and move them. And the only way we could only go as far as they would hold on. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't pick them up. I'd be like, okay, latch on. And I'd grab the ladder, and then I would move them.
Yeah, so working grip strength. And then as soon as she started to like what I perceived to be intentional control of her legs, I would make her squat.
Yeah.
Like I would try to get her lined up, and then she would eventually push up, you know, and I'd just sit there and maybe even work through some eccentrics But the big thing too was, you know, I think Jesse also was the guy talking about, like, when you're carrying the baby,
the football,
carry like a football, so the head's out. Yeah. And then what I would do is I intentionally would start working my hand further and further and further back. And then we actually started to do some like almost supine bridge holds, isos. So like constantly working the back. And she was a smaller baby though, so I think she was, I couldn't imagine
which
some of my
friends. Which is good though, but she's bulked up since then.
Yeah, now she's a fire plug.
I used to do the same thing. I'd hold them by the hips and make them do like a back extension and arch their backs. But the big one, and this always kind of blew me away, and this actually changed a little bit of my thinking in terms of lifting weights when I realized that the squat is how the baby stands up.
Mm-hmm.
So they like roll into a squat and then they stand up. It's how they go from the ground to a squat. Like we in later life eccentrically load to like sit, but they go from laying on the ground into a squat to stand, which kind of made me think, I'm like, oh, the concentric movement of the squat in terms of like a functional movement. And I hate that term, functional movements, but also the cross patterning of crawling being very important, you know? So like putting them on, and what I would do is, I put them on their stomachs and then they would kind of get into a crawl and they would take a hand and then kind of like move the other one. And then I'd put them back down, and it just trying to find ways to, I guess, torment's not the right word, but challenge their environment.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And there's, so one thing we learned about, Ash did the whole Birth Fit curriculum through, through Birth Fit. There's there's two or three courses. And one of the things that they're big advocates of is, the DNS. You remember, have you ever heard of that DNS, which I'm looked it up real quick, is dynamic neuromuscular stabilization. And there's like, don't quote me, maybe she has it on this blog. But there's a progression, right? There's a progression that they've observed for kiddos. Like, you know, step one is being able to roll, right? Roll on your belly or vice versa and roll on your back. So there's rolling. Then there's like this half bear, then there's full bear, then there's tripod. And like, so there's like a whole progression. And when you're sitting there and you're watching your kid squirm and learn to move, you're kind of like ticking these off. And it goes in line with not force, like this progression is what this ultimately builds the patterning of walking.
Well,
and climbing. And if you rush that with some of the assisted walker or assisted standing type of toys or convenience tools for parents, because that's really what our perception was, is like, we looked at everything. We're like, which ones are just to make a parent's job easier?
Yeah.
And then we said, we're not going to do that. Like, I don't know. Like we just, whether it's intentionally go the hard road or just like, it seemed like that was just a shortcut or a hack where it's like, I don't think so. To the point where like, I was a big advocate not to get a video monitor. I thought, why don't we just get the noise? Cause that's all we need to know.
Yeah.
But then I ultimately caved on it, and I was afraid that Ash was going to be, we've been to friends' houses where they just have that fucking monitor and they're glued to it. And you're trying to talk to them over dinner, or like drinks or something after dinner. And they're just like looking at their baby. Like I didn't want to even be tempted by that. And I think we've done like a pretty good job of not having that interfere with us. But that was like a big, and man, talk about our parents had like, no, like my folks did a good job of respecting boundaries. Ash's folks maybe could have done a better job of respecting boundaries, but they did not understand why we didn't want to take some of the like convenience and luxury items on our, that they wanted to buy us like for the baby shower, you know? But
the other one that I was big on was, so I remember years ago we went to San Diego Zoo with the kids. And so as soon as the kids could walk, like, and I mean like not just like kind of like, you know, drunk college girl walk, but actually like kind of walk, I refused to bring a stroller anywhere.
Yeah.
So the, and it was pretty interesting. I think the girls were probably, man, they would have had to have been 3 or 4 years old. We go to San Diego, we get out, and it was pretty hot that day, but like not, after we lived here in Texas, fucking nothing is hot. So warm day in California, might be 70 degrees, 75. So we go to the deal, we walk up and we walk the entire zoo. And the girls were maybe, so this is pre-Cashy. So they were probably 3. We walked that entire day, went to the zoo, went here, climbed here. And like there were these like really heavy people and they're really obese kids. Like these fat kids just in strollers that were like 5 and 6 years old, just like splayed out. Mm-hmm. And these parents who were on the verge of a heart attack pushing them around and being like, you know what? And if the kids were tired, I'd get them water. If they wanted to rest, I was fine. But I'm like, I'm not pushing you in a stroller. Like, you need to learn to have the capacity to be able to move. I'm not going to fucking stroller you everywhere.
Yep.
And that was like a real big one for us was like, I didn't like when we traveled on airplanes, we had like the baby Bjorn thing because it was just easier to get through security and have your hands. But other than that, I carried them everywhere and Kate carried them just for the fact that like, I never wanted to make it like convenient for us. Like I'm going to carry them like even on airplanes. Like, you know, we have like a big like cart almost. It's like a collapsible deal. We put all our luggage in and make the kids walk. So I just think that there's something to it. Like it's less convenient for you as a parent, but at the end of the day, it like teaches the kids to be resilient and move and run. And, but the biggest one, I think what parents do is, they add these things out of their own convenience. Like I got to do something. I don't want to chase the kid around. So I'm going to put it in this jumpy thing in the, doorway, or I'm going to put them in, these, you know, walker things. And, like it just, it, I don't think it benefits the children at all athletically.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the other one is, make sure you have some dogs. So dude, I remember the kids would come home and the dogs would like lick them. Lick the face, lick everything, lick all the food off of them. And I remember, I can't remember, was it, who was the one that told me about developing immune system that children that grow up with dogs and grow up with animals in the house have stronger immune systems later in life. And it was like, sure enough, the dogs went over and would like lick these kids clean to the point where we didn't even have to wipe them up. And like, they're like licking them in the mouth. And I'm like, and then thinking like, well, it's probably helping their immune system.
And cleans your floors.
100%.
The fact that people don't like, so things fall on the ground. And it's funny, you go over to somebody's house and like something falls on the ground and you kind of like look around. You're like, oh shit, you don't have a dog?
Yeah. No, I'm not picking that up.
I was like, dude, anything falls on the ground, like ninjas come over there. You guys were talking about having a Roomba. I got two dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have
named a Roomba?
What do you got?
Going back to Rafael Ruiz's 2019 Power Athlete Symposium presentation that's available on the Power Athlete YouTube channel. He deep dives into the life cycle of an athlete, and a conclusion that he brought up, I feel, is in our caller's stage. So he walked through four phases, and the final phase, and I thought this was awesome, was Raf calls it alpha within the presentation. When he gets to that segment, it's you as an athlete or a leader or a coach or now a father, your kids start to pick up on the little things, the nuances. Luke said the facial expressions and things like that, but it's also how you move. And John, you referenced an old people study and also your temperament, how you communicate and all these different things. So Ruiz put that into the athlete development of when you reach the stage of whether it's, you know, the freshman following the senior, or the father figure being representative for this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old kid that learns to then communicate and work with others and share and so on and so forth. I thought it was awesome that he dedicated the time and the presentation to how you hold yourself as how your young ones, whether they are your athletes or your
kids,
yeah.
The shadow
start to
you
take
cast.
On.
Well,
yeah, shadow, that's
kids
a good
learn
point.
By watching.
Yep.
So that's been a big one. I've talked about, you know, they're always watching. I mean, I've told you guys a story about driving, and I got cut off, and I kind of like put my head back, and I was like, fuck, like, you know, like just like this. And then all of a sudden, like a couple days later, we're driving and like something happens. And all of a sudden I look in the back and Jamie goes, fuck, like head exactly, like didn't even say the word fuck, but like, fuck, like kind of just like grunted something out. And like instantly I could see Kate's face just looking right at me, and I'm like, well, that's on me.
Yep.
You know, but I also believe that a healthy use of profanity, especially at a young age, like I was well skilled in profanity as a little kid for the fact that I had older brothers, and you know, they were so excited to teach me all these words, hoping that I would use them in inappropriate ways. But I think for a lot of that stuff, like you guys grew up with sisters, I grew up with older brothers, and I think that like inherently something with older brothers, and like I really wish, I'm stoked to catch these older sisters, but I'm always like, when I see them do stuff, I'm like, your older brother would have beat your ass. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think kids are kind of like dogs in some way. Like some do well by themselves, but I think for the most part, usually kids do well with other kids. So, you know, like, you know, I know Luke's probably, you know, has Ruby and probably maybe working on one on the way. Cause, be a lonely day if it was just you guys and Ruby.
Yeah. We need an army. So some other things I want to get to, I'll just jump into this part first. Cause the next thing I want to talk about is like my ideal sports participation for little Ruby. But listen, dude, listen, number one, congratulations, which we forgot to say, because it is like a totally worthwhile endeavor. I hesitantly, reluctantly signed on to pay a healthy fee to have a doula. Mm. So for dads who don't know what a doula is, they are essentially like your wife's during the pregnancy process and delivery process. They are your wife's advocate, essentially, right? And I was fortunate, I guess, that we were able to land Lindsay Matthews from BirthFit, who we're friends with. So like I had a pre-existing relationship with her. So it wasn't like, I don't know. I guess for me, it was just dollars and cents. Cause like going into this whole thing and we decided to go to a birthing center that wasn't covered by insurance, but like, I don't know. My thing was, and heeding John's advice is like, you are assistant coach. So my goal was to like support, push back and understand and make sure it was justified. And like, and Asha did a great job of justifying it. And it wasn't just like, well, I just want to do it because someone so-and-so did. No, like she had like put a lot of thought into how the experience that she wanted to have. And I did, leading up to that, literally everything I could to like, be her advocate, interface with the doula. We had doula meetings and like it put me outside of my comfort zone, but I just did it. Like, and when it was game day and like it was on and labor had started and like active labor and pushing, and we're in this like birthing center, which is half hospital, half home birth type a setup. If I was there alone, it would have been hard. Yeah. So what ended up in hindsight being Ashley's advocate was also like my buffer as well, because there are times where like you're just tired and you want to kind of be there and soothe or comfort your wife, but then you got to go like talk to the nurse. Like, I want to, I'm like, Lindsay, I want to talk to these ladies. Go figure this out. And she's like, you got it. And then she just like went, talked to the ladies.
And she does this for a living.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, and she's been to multiple ones of these things. She gets to know, and I assume most doulas are female, right? Like there's probably male doulas, but that'd be interesting.
Ben Skutnik, right?
He was aspiring male doula. Yeah. But I would say explore that option. It was worth it. Like it was 100% worth it, because I've had friends who have not had a doula and have had these have to have hard discussions, especially in like hospital births where there is kind of a stigma, whether or not it's justified or not. There is a stigma that, man, a lot of these hospitals will rush into a C-section because they want to just clear the beds and turn everything.
Well, it's like, faster.
Yeah.
And there's less chance of anything. They can turn into a surgical procedure, yeah, which makes it a higher cash value. Mm-hmm. And they get you in and out. Like, yeah, they, like the baby's born in 2 minutes.
And it makes sense. And lots of healthy babies come via C-section. Like, if that's part of your thing, cool, go for it. Like, I know some friends who are like, no, we're taking advantage of the medical system here. Like, we want to go that route.
We would have done natural other than the fact that both the girls were breech.
Yes.
So it was like...
extremely high risk.
Well, like, they can't come feet first.
Yeah.
So, and they're, it's hard to...
Well, it depends what hippie doulas you talk to.
Well,
because we had a girl who knew how to do it.
Oh, how to... They do a thing which is called a manual manipulation, mm-hmm, where they can turn the baby... But the problem is
sure,
for twins.
Oh, dude,
I don't think that they, like, I remember like kind of researching it and it was like, well, we either turn the babies or you have a miscarriage, and you're like, oh fuck. Okay. That's not happening.
Right.
But yeah. And then the worst part is on Kate's, when we had Cash, they got it in her head that there was a chance of like a rupture because, mm-hmm, she had a C-section.
Vaginal birth after C-section, right? And, it's like a big medical red flag.
It was like 3%.
Yeah.
So like it's
like just, an 80% increased risk on top of 1.2%, which is, it's just, and it's nonsense.
And the way they sold it to her was like, and I wish that I had had somebody like a Lindsay, like a doula, to kind of like talk us through it. But like, as soon as that doctor fucking like saw, like tried to put the fear into my wife, it was like, well, let's just, you know, this. And it would have been nice to have somebody like a Lindsay being like, Yeah, she's full of shit. Don't worry. This is totally normal.
And even if you did say it, John, it's not the same. So it's not the same. And it's not like about you. You ultimately, at the end of the day, you just want what's best, obviously, for your baby and then for your wife. Like, you want what's best for them. And it's a very fantastic, like, epic experience all around. So, like, well, but on that end, I would say, dude, there is work to be done starting now. Like, your training starts now. Mama's training starts now. If she wants, well, it should have probably started 2 years ago. But if she wants to, like, go, like, an all-natural route and, like, no meds, anything like that, there's a lot of work to do, I think. And I think that's what made Ashley pretty successful, is, like, every day she woke up, she trained, she did her self-work, she did her everything she needed to do as guided by the crew at BirthFit. And there's other people out there that can build this framework for you, but I'd recommend it. And the folks who I know, and this is great, small sample size, kind of straw man, but the folks who I know who did that type of work had, like, better postpartum experiences and, like, early infant experiences. The babies are kind of chill. Some of the folks who I know who were, like, maybe just ignored it and showed up on game day, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a bad
deal. Kids kind of were hard. Like, they just had a harder time postpartum. Yeah. And I don't know if that's, take it for what it is. And the sample size is like 5.
Well, the other one too is it's a lot easier for the woman to get back into shape and to get everything working again if they were in pretty decent shape going in. So I know, like, with, like, a lot of the postpartum stuff and just, you know, some of these issues, like, if you're in pretty good shape going into it, when you get out the other side and all of a sudden you start training and getting back into it, it's a lot easier to go somewhere that you've been opposed to somewhere you've never done. The other big one too is the breastfeeding deal is, like, not only great for the kid, but, like I was watching my wife eat, like, 5,000 to 7,000 calories and was still, like, fucking losing weight. Mm-hmm. And she, like, it was amazing to see this whole transformation. And then thinking, like, women that are, like, don't breastfeed, I'm kind of like, well, how do you get back into shape? And more importantly, like, you know, how does that whole process? Because in a way, it's just, I really would stress that and think, but I'll tell you, when I was born, I was breastfed, and I remember my grandmother, and I heard this from my mom secondhand, being like, "You're breastfeeding? How low class of you." There was, like, kind of a movement in, like, the 50s, 60s, and 70s where, like, breastfeeding was kind of, like, low class, and, like, there's a better solution and all that. And it's kind of gone back full circle now where, you know, it's considered the, you know, the thing to do, and it's kind of the best for the child. So,
and on that note too, you would think those dumb little babies know what they're doing. They have no clue.
No.
There's an angle. It's like a pinch, a C clamp to get a latch with the flange. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It was like, we had a hard time. It was a challenge. It was certainly like a battle. We ended up getting a consultant or a coach, and that, like, again, I'm thinking, like, $180 an hour.
Lactation, like, consultant.
I'm like, I'm just so fucking frugal. Like, I'm like, this, what? And okay, then, let's and then burn this money. And they show up, and then it was like 2 seconds. This woman had the baby latched. I'm like, holy shit.
I would have paid $500
for this. Where were you 3 weeks ago? Like, you know, so it was, I'd recommend, like, there is a lot of like, institutional knowledge that just isn't shared. We're not in, like, I asked her, I'm like, why don't babies just know this? And I think we've talked about it. Our species, at least, when we, like, our offspring are so helpless, like the gestational period, that they're not, when we deliver a baby, they're not self-sufficient till
26.
35?
How old do you text?
34.
Yeah, you got one more year.
We had those night nurses come, and those big women showed up, and, like, they had her latched. And the crazy thing, Kate breastfed both the girls at the same time, which, you know, basically makes her a pro in my book.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So when Cashie was born and they brought him in, she, like, literally, it was pretty funny because, like, we were in the hospital and she, like, gets Cashie and she, like, you know, got him to latch the whole thing. And then the ladies come in and they're, like, trying to talk to her. And I finally just said to the nurse, I was like, "Hey, we don't need any help." Like, she had twins. Like, she'll figure it out. And the lady was like, "Well, she's, you know, this." And finally I was like, "Get the fuck out of here."
Yeah.
And just actually asked the nurse, I was like, "Hey, I don't mean to be a fucking rude, but get the fuck out."
Mm-hmm.
And, because they, like, all they were doing was coming in and fucking it up. And I'm like, dude, I have, hundreds of hours being awake in the middle of the night trying to get these babies to latch. Like, believe me, she knows what she's doing. And yeah. like these ladies were arguing with us. And at that point, we had such a bad experience going to the hospital that I would like, if I could go back in time, I should have put like my foot down and been like, we're not fucking doing this hospital. We're not dealing with these fucking butchers. Mm-hmm. We're going to go and do it this way. And I think it's just a lot better an experience for the women, for the father, for the baby and mm-hmm. everything. Like they're go to the hospital if something is catastrophic and there's a problem and, you know, mm-hmm. life's on the line, but going there electively, I won't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to, for any future.
You're going to do the kiddie pool at the house?
I don't know, man. Like
you're going to bring in a dude to like play the guitar and like,
you know, a guy.
Yeah. We're going to have a guy playing a guitar. We're going to have like a what do you call it? Like a pixie girl. Mm-hmm. It'd be great. Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm a firm believer, like start the training, like get serious about it now. And I say training, not necessarily like banging weights, but like get a system, get aligned, I would recommend a doula. I'd recommend even like new parent courses. I think it was worth it in hindsight. It's felt silly to be honest with you, but I think it worked out. And I guess I don't have anything else to compare it to personally. But then now the fun stuff, I guess. So my plan, and I guess I thought I was going to have like this little frail, thin baby that would grow into like a tiny young lady, but she's turning into like a pretty thick baby.
Like, well, it's good. Baby should be thick.
Yeah, but not like, I mean, she looks like a linebacker, well, I think. But it's also my kid. I'm curious if I have distorted reality.
Do you remember how thick Jamie was?
Yeah, but she was like pudgy, like cute baby pudge.
She was like huge, like thick, and mm-hmm. now she's a beanpole.
So anyways, the plan, regardless, I think I'm going to lean hard into trying to get her into wrestling, like girls wrestling. And there's an Instagram account that I just fucking love that's on one of my rotations within World of Engineering and Calvin and Hobbes is Wrestle Like a Girl. And like, it's just so cool to see these little girls get out there and scrap. Like, I think we all can think of buddies in our lives who were wrestlers and have grown up to have like an amazing work ethic as well. You know, and talking to when we had Josh Bridges on the show, like I just hope that can be an avenue where she embraces that competitive edge.
Well, you just got to watch Vision Quest.
Oh yeah. No, like we're thinking about it. We're thinking how we're going to do that. But if she doesn't want to, like, again, like every parent we've kind of had on and asked, I'm also going to mostly nurture where the interest lies. If it turns out to be music and dance, that's fine. But I want there to be some sort of like constant, the Angela Duckworth, the hard thing. Every year there has to be physical activity in our family. And that's going to, like, we're just going to set that precedent out of the gate. And early on, I feel like you can really influence what the kids want to do, like swimming and gymnastics and things like that. So like there's this obligatory exposure to swimming and gymnastics. And I want to try to get her into like maybe like BMX or like some sort of like off-road biking where there's pedaling sagittally and you're steering in the transverse and there's a high level of like CNS stimulation because you got speed coming by you, you're turning. Like, so it's a multi-planar thing. And that came from Greg. Who's our dude in Wolf Brigade?
Films? Oh, Greg. Yeah. Reinhold. No,
Greg.
Walsh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greg Walsh. So those are like what I want to try to get early exposure to where you like, well, the kid doesn't know any better. And they're like, I don't know, Dad just said I'd do this.
The thing is don't make it easy. I think I was telling you guys, Kelly rides horses pretty much every day now, but her and her like little group of friends, like the parents all of a sudden like decided that they were going to like make the deal easier. Mm-hmm. And some of the parents went and bought these pretty expensive ponies, like show ponies that had experience and what, and didn't get nervous. And all of a sudden these girls who like, now they have these horses that are really well trained and like they don't refuse, they don't do anything. They show up, they're like totally this. And so like I asked Kelly and she's like, you know, I feel like the other riders are getting better than me. And I'm like, why is that? And she's like, well, my horse, and she just rides one of the school horses. She's like, I feel like my horse isn't like refuses and isn't as easy to ride as her friend's ponies. And I was like, good. I was like, you know what? You're not giving up on that horse. You're going to take it. So I want her to have adversity at a young age. Mm-hmm. I want them to like have to get into something where like they're a little down and they got to work harder. Whereas if the solution is me just throwing money and buying her a bit, like, well, we'll just buy her an expensive horse, right? Right. Like the parents did. Yeah. And then that is what allows her to be good instead of like fighting in the trenches and dealing with it and developing your skill, because what's going to happen is she's going to come out the other side so much. And I'm like, the parents are like, well, we just want her to have their excuse was, we just want the kids to have a great experience. And I'm like, you just want to see a whole bunch of ribbons for your kids so you can stand there and brag as a fucking parent. This isn't about the kid. It's about you. Mm-hmm. And what I've realized is that parents live vicariously and they're able to like relive their childhood and like, you know, some imaginary slight that they're going to write. And what they do is they get into it. And we see this all the time with like kids sports where like the parents are super involved and they have this dream for the kid. That's really not the kid's dream. It's the parent's dream, but they're going to like let it manifest. And we see it all the time, like living next door to the barn and like seeing these parents, like these moms are like obsessed, like these horse moms are obsessed with these kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I tell Kate all the time, I'm like, is there a worse horse we can get her? Like, is there a worse camp horse that like can't do anything that she has to, not that I want her to do poorly.
Fish.
She has been riding fish. God, because I told her that fish is our power athlete spirit animal. And so, so she was like, okay, I'm going to ride fish today. And Fishy actually really likes her. But her horse is great, man. He comes down. I just think like that idea of hardship, and it's such a tough thing too, because you don't want your kid to struggle, but you almost know.
Yeah, I do. I think, well, but I haven't seen it yet. Well,
but,
you know what I mean?
But like, it's kind of like I remember when the girls played soccer, and this one girl was like pretty good. She had an older sister, and like totally being Jamie with the ball, and like she didn't know what to do. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I know that hurt, and I went over there, and I was like, oh, thank God. And so I was like, Jamie, what are you gonna do? She's like, I'm gonna go fuck her up. And I was like, okay. And sure enough, she was like running after this girl the whole time, like strangely competitive. The problem is that if we make everything easy and we just make it kind of a simple landing, like I want them to fall out of a tree. I want them to hurt themselves. I want them to get scrapes and bumps and this. And I want them to encounter hardships. Like, I forgot who said it. But like if the first time you actually face adversity is in your 20s or 30s, you're fucked. Mm-hmm. Like, I want these kids to face adversity. I want them to learn how to fight and like be down and this, and how to like, you know, grow up and be able to come up. And I think that's so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In my plan, which obviously, what's the saying? Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Mike Tyson.
I'm going to try to at least enforce, like, there's got to be a lane of like, this is what mom and dad want. And then there's got to be also, I think, a trade-off of autonomy. And in that lane, I'm going to really focus on whatever I think will contribute to potential scholarship opportunities. And I think that's pretty broad, right?
Well, you're talking crew, lacrosse.
Well, you heard the Erin Cafaro story. Remember Erin? She trained with Kelly Starrett. Mm-hmm. She won 2 Olympic gold medals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she, her brother, DJ Cafaro, played football at Cal. He's younger than me. But when he was playing at Cal, his sister, obviously Erin, his sister, would come to the games. And her senior year of high school, they're at like some like pre-football barbecue thing, and she's meeting some of the ADs and the coaches. And the crew coach is like, have you ever thought about going to Cal? And she's like, I don't know if I have grades in this. And he's like, well, have you ever thought about rowing? She's like, I've never rowed. He's like, well, we give scholarships. We can help you get in. So she gets in on preferred enrollment to go to Berkeley, goes and ends up becoming like an NCAA champ, All-American, and ends up winning 2 gold medals scholarship, and becomes one of the most dominant rowers in the world, and had never rowed before showing up, but had an athletic background.
Right.
Was pretty strong. And just because her brother was playing football at Cal, got an opportunity to go there and go to a dominant rowing school. Yeah. So, like, you never know where the opportunity lies, but there is definite opportunity in developing an athletic skill set that can be utilized in any way.
Which I think the X factor in that, talking to so many podcast guests, whether it was them as an athlete or as coaches, what they recognize is like the proverbial X factor, the work ethic and the response to adversity. Like, at that intersection is where coaches can see potential, which is why I think, at least, wrestling, work ethic, if we can just get that wrestling going, what do you got? Challenge or
I will challenge.
Go.
The Jim Davis, sports don't teach lessons, coaches do.
Okay.
Man.
If the community that you're presented mm-hmm. does have the right coach.
Man, that's some real dickhead coaches. Like growing up.
I know we've shared experiences, but doesn't mean there's not good coaches out there. So that be.
No, I mean, like, I don't think growing up, other than maybe my dad and Mr. Batty when I was like 6 years old, every coach I had was like an awful experience in terms of dealing with these. Like, I remember we'd go to Little League and just get screamed at. I had that basketball coach, Mark Bush, who, if even as a 40-year-old man, he's probably an old man now, if I saw him, I'd still beat his ass. You know, he used to like kick basketballs at us and yell at us. And it was funny because years later I ran into dudes that were on my team and they were like, Mark Bush's team, huh? I was like, yeah, I remember that. And they were like, that guy was a fucking asshole. Like, to the point where if I was a parent and my kid came home and told me about that, I would go and kind of stand over and watch this and he would get fucking punched. Like, you don't treat kids like that. And I had Ken Klug and these dudes were just such like, you know what they were? They were failures as adults, failures as athletes, and they somehow channeled this as being dickheads to kids. And I think the problem is that, like, you know, like you're out there trying to like somehow right the wrong of some imaginary slight that you had as a kid. And like, not everything flaps at, I mean, I remember Mark Bush told me I was the single worst athlete he'd ever seen and I would never play sports in high school and I'd be a failure my whole life. Can you imagine telling a 10-year-old kid that?
Well, there are those people out there.
And I guess I don't disagree on the coaching side of things, but also playing the odds and knowing that you don't have a ton of control over coaching. Think of maybe the people you've worked with or the friends that you've met or acquaintances, and you look at their career trajectories and maybe just try to align whether or not they have athletic experience and what sports they did participate in. And I would say, in my experience, most of the wrestler dudes I know are hustlers. They just hustle.
Hard workers.
Yeah, yeah. And most of, let's say, like the lifetime soccer type of athletes, or even track and field, like solo sport folks. I mean, they're talented, but I've not thrived in a team environment with them or seen them thrive in team environments.
I think it's different. Like all the girls,
I shouldn't say most.
All the girls that I knew that were soccer players were all pretty switched on. Mm-hmm. All the dudes that I knew that were dude soccer players, not necessarily switched mm-hmm. on.
Great actors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Falling, flopping.
Mm-hmm. And soccer? I shouldn't say most. I'm just thinking of outliers, and I know that there's a fallacy in that as well.
If
I would be willing to relocate each of my kids to go to the, like, optimal coaching environments to ensure that they get transformative experiences, I'd consider that. However, it's not only is it cost prohibitive, logistically it becomes a significant challenge. So you got to fucking play the odds on the sport, I think.
So Saturdays, Cashy's in this sports deal where he gets 2 weeks of flag football, then he plays two weeks of baseball, and then he does 2 weeks of soccer.
Yeah.
So we've been going to flag football on Saturdays. And it's pretty funny to, like, yeah, I mean, it's like the difference between 4 and 5 and 6 is pretty huge. Like Cashy still, he's 4. And then the kids that are like 5, like a late 5, early 6 are like taller and like way more just like switched on. Like that developmental stage, like you go from like being kind of like a little kid to like kind of a bigger, I guess there's like a weird development piece. But like, you know, running, and they like play flag football. So then they have to play sharks and minnows in this. And like, I ask him, I'm like, what was your favorite part? And he's like, well, I got to drink water, you know, like
it was awesome.
Like whereas the other kids are out there, like one of the old, like, I think the kid's older than him. He's got like gloves. He's like his favorite player. And he's out there like trying to like do Terrell Owens stuff. And I'm like watching this. And like, it's pretty funny to like see the parents too, or who rightfully show. So, I mean, we're stoked to see him do this, but like, I can see these parents like foreseeing what their potential could be of the child at like at age 6. And I'm like, it's like, I just want him to have fun.
Yeah,
like, I just want him to run around, have fun, like enjoy camaraderie, like be around other kids, like just go out there. Like, I hope somebody pushes you down and you push him down. Like, I for me, and whereas my wife's super competitive, like, I just want, like, I know what it's like to work and play the sport. And I remember when it was fun, it wasn't, because of the people that we were like these coaches treating Little League baseball like it's fucking the World Series and their $1 million job is on the line. Like, that's how these parents treated this stuff. And it was an awful experience for these kids to get fucking yelled at and have these parents treat us like this. And so, like, I see that and I'm like, I just want everybody to hit. I want everybody to have fun. I want people to run and have a good time because I know what it's like to do this when it's not supposed to be fun in the same way. So,
But going back, so text on the coaching front.
Yeah, I would just simply encourage you to be a part of that relationship versus the old handoff, the old pass off. And then if it is a negative experience, then you have a teaching moment with your kid to work through that.
Mm-hmm.
So then it becomes, all right, well, you have a manager that you can't get along with, and then not just immediately jump to old
they don't like
Ruby's
me.
Side. Exactly. So you can teach them to manage that versus all the coaches hate me. So if you're a part of that relationship, you have potential to intervene. And if they are truly an evil coach, it will catch up to them.
Sure.
And then you can do your part to make sure they don't allow this to happen to future kids.
Mm-hmm.
An example, somebody emailed me this morning sharing some Instagram videos of coaches doing poor things in the weight room for some high school students and saying, like, you know, we need to do something about it, so on and so forth. And I'm like, do you know this person personally? Have you talked to them? And the person says, yes, tried to go up and their ego didn't allow them to have a conversation. I said, okay, well, how you approach them was not clear. I would suggest kill them with kindness, go in, offer a workout, see if you can ask them to teach you something. So then you can start to build a relationship for you then to show them that this may not be the best lifting technique. And it was deadlift in particular. It was horrendous.
Like,
but
a dog shitting a razor blade?
Even worse.
Hmm. And, you mean shitting two razor blades?
Oh, yeah. If the kid did that again, his career is in jeopardy. Anyway, for the video that was
sent.
And
they're like, oh, deadlifting's
so
bad.
So it's not that coach was wrong to send this, but how he approached it, it could have been better. So now you can prevent every other kid from totally facing that. Whether it's the wrestling, the football, if she does get a weightlifting coach, you have the opportunity to, you know, a thing or two.
Sure.
To then bridge that gap. And it's, if you're not a part of that relationship, like, then forget about it. Then it becomes the negative to, and you have this list like Billy Madison, right? Mm-hmm. Crossing off names of old ball coaches.
I still remember these dudes, man.
I still remember, and
I'm sure you do too. Like, and that's the crazy thing. Like, I would never, I can't admit, like if I was a coach and I went out and coached my sons and I treated a kid in such a way that like 20 years later, he still remembered my name and spoke with me with disdain. It was funny. Like I had this exact conversation with my brother, Ed, who was he started coaching my nephew Luke's baseball because of the asshole parents. And he's like, I want these kids to have fun. And the amount of stress and fights and battles he got in with these parents, and like, everybody's going to play. Why the hell are you playing that kid? Everybody plays. Everybody hits. Everybody has a good time. Like, have fun. And, you know, my brother played college football and was always a real successful athlete. And he's like, I want these kids to have a wonderful memory. And I don't want them to look back like you do on these coaches that, like, you know, here you are when you were 10 years old and now you're, you know, 40 something. And 30 years later, you still remember the name and be like, fuck that dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, can you imagine, like, at 10 years old that a coach can treat a kid, whereas 30 years later, he still remembers it? And so, but my brother Ed also fucks with me. He's like, you purposely remember that shit and you would use it as like tackle and fuel, to quote Bobby Boucher.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, you would use that as
visualize, like, and attack.
Well, but like kind of like the Rocky Balboa where you got to get beat. And he's like, you know, whatever takes you, like whatever you need, like whatever energy you need to fucking go forward. But I would not want to be in a situation where I coached kids where people didn't have fun, they didn't have a good time, especially for little kids. Like, go out there and be an asshole to a bunch of like 8, 9, and 10 year olds. Like, those kids, like they're out there just like trying not to like fall over and, like, you know, like, I just, yeah, man, it's a bummer that that like the parents, I don't know, desire to be successful or how they view themselves or what they want out of it becomes greater than the experience that the kids have.
Mm-hmm.
And also on the coaching, and we talked about this with Justin Kavanaugh on the episode where from his experience, what they did at the pros started to trickle down into college and over the years trickled down to the high school. And now we're at the point where we're seeing college strength and conditioning work its way into the middle school
or
level.
High school.
because that's all the coaches know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem versus having and creating a conversation. Like we think about our old time in the weight room as high school, and we just did it. We worked hard, grunted, and some kids got hurt, some kids didn't, but it's all our coaches knew. And then,
well, it was the age old, like, hey, you got to break a lot of eggs to make an omelet. You're like, but those broken eggs were slip discs.
Right. But was it intentionally that way? I don't know.
I think what it is, who did we talk to yesterday? Who do we have the podcast?
Josh Storms.
Storms. Talking about how, like, today there's so much access to information that, like, I think 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, you had an excuse. Like, I don't know any better. But now I think between social media, YouTube, the internet, all the other stuff, if you're still spinning this same shitty paradigm and like bad technique in this, which ends you up on some, what was it, squat fails? What was our favorite Instagram page?
Quarter squat gang.
Quarter squat gang. Like, ends you up on that. Like, you know better. Like, there was an excuse where, like, people just didn't know because they had never seen strong people and they didn't necessarily know. So they were doing the best they could based off of seeing static pictures in a magazine. Like, I remember the first time seeing Kurt Kowalski, like, on a VHS, like, squat. And I, like, dude squatted at, like, what was it, like, 1,003 for a double. And I was like, oh, shit, that's what it's supposed to look like? You know,
it's a representation.
Yeah. But now they know, and there's no excuse. I mean, there's solutions like Power Athlete where, like, you can be ignorant and pretend like you don't know, but there are solutions you can reach out to.
And this is what I'm leading to is the opportunity. I would suggest even more so in the skill development as a parent is your importance to increase your social intelligence when it comes to movement, athleticism, sport, coaching, and injury prevention. That is one of the biggest focuses and the targets of the ACL course is we gave it to parents to empower them to have the difficult conversations because the coaches are so ingrained in skill and W's, it puts you in a position to see what they're doing and applying and where their holes are that you can fill them with your kid athletes' movement to help protect them from injury, which in turn, the more playing time they get, the better they get and the more opportunities they have to play and get a little Rubio scholarship. But it is important to increase your social intelligence, not to point the finger to attack, not get the world-class horse to make it easier on the kid and not have the kid or backing them up when saying the coach hates me. Well, let's talk about this and see if we can put both parties in a position to have the hard conversation where it leads to continuing to play and continuing to have a passion and love for sport or movement because it is a limited window. And if you fall out of love with sport and training, that's a big fear for me, in my book, anyone I'm talking to and communicating, because we all know the negative consequences of health and life because how you move is how you live. How you live is how you move. And before you know it, it's too late. And Kavanaugh talked about it. Like, once he stopped training because if life got in the way,
fucking wheels fall off.
There's no going back, or it's a long road. As Luke says in his blog.
All the time.
All the time.
All the time. It's a tagline, actually.
I think we curb stomped it.
Yeah, for sure. The big thing is the social piece, Tex. Like, whatever that is, that like, social, that's the, like, part of that X factor where a coach can be, just mold the skill.
What, and we've covered a lot of ground, but you expressed that as well with the doula and your experience, John, protecting and the heightened stress, the situation you got. You are the assistant coach, but guess what? You got a kick-ass coordinator in there to intervene.
As
a doula, just a representation, but
you're just a position coach.
Okay. It. Yeah. Y'all know better than me.
Get back, coach.
At the same time.
Did you see that? He didn't like that. Storms didn't like that at all when I called him a get back coach. He was like,
well, no,
that was great.
So that's what the dad should be in the waiting room or whatever.
Ideally.
No, like, the thing is like,
that's the doula. Get back.
So before we had like the doula ladies show up, I remember, like, we brought the kids home, and, like, the doula ladies were supposed to show up, like, a day or two after we got home. And I remember, like, us trying to figure out the breastfeeding thing. Like, it wasn't fucking working. And like all of a sudden, and like Kate's like, you know, I'm like over there, I'm like Googling my phone, I'm trying to watch YouTube videos, I'm reading like, try this. And you're going through all this whole situation and like nothing's working. And then these like ladies walk through and like the babies were feeding within like 10 seconds. Try this. They were all latched up. And I remember being like, my work here is finished. And I just went to the other, I just like left and went out to the family room. And I was like, see you later. I'm like, thank God these women showed up and did this. They were like the Mary Poppins of showed up. They got the babies feeding and then like they picked them up. They burped them, put them down. And I was like, my job here is not needed. I will just disappear. Psh, smoke bomb.
Luke, you said $180 an hour for the breastfeeding coach?
Yeah, lactation consultant.
Lactation. Mm-hmm. And they did in 2 seconds?
Yeah, but then you do the nursing and then you try to do this. It's a whole...
I was just curious. She charged by the hour and...
Oh, no.
But you're not paying for the time. You're paying for her knowledge because it probably took her like 10 years to get that far. Yeah. So, but at the end of the day, in the middle of the night when you can't get the baby to latch, if you'd pay somebody $180 to get him to latch, it's fucking... I'll wire you the money.
We got to talk to her about her sales technique so we can get parents and old high school football coaches. We can be the lactation consultants for weightlifting and get them to buy in. That's what I'm saying.
Because
those coaches.
That's a really weird analogy you just made.
Well, think about it. Those coaches don't know shit.
No bridge too far.
But they got it. No, they don't.
But there's like.
It's so easy. It's just the nips.
Very immediate feedback that it's going wrong. That's all I can say.
A lot of talking. Like,
I would say the same for deadlifting, but.
And squatting and pressing.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. That was a fun one. A little over 30 minutes. Thanks for calling, new dad. Hopefully, feel free to reach out. Any other questions, we'll push it out to you. And thank you, Power Athlete Nation, for listening into another episode of the Premier Podcast in Strength and Conditioning. Bye. Oh, if you have a question, call us 929-464-4640. That's 929-ING-ING-0. That's right. Bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head to powerathletehq.com/training to choose from a number of programs to meet your specific performance goals. And if you like to break a mental sweat too, visit academy.powerathletehq.com and become a real stakeholder in you or your athlete's success. Until next time, bye!
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.